You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Oh my gosh, our house is just full of so many things. Yeah. So I think and the label is still together. We're still doing it. We're just kind of doing it like more part-time instead of full-time. I was really pushing it full-time for a while, and then I realized, you know, I can make a lot more money doing art like what I was doing. And I'd rather, you know, it was kind of just killing the excitement for me a little bit too. So I realized that I was happier doing music myself rather than supporting other bands, which I also enjoyed that experience of helping other bands, you know, break out. And I still completely will do that, you know, as much, you know, part-time, but I didn't want to do it like full-time and miss out on making music. So that was like, you know, I was doing everything all at once and I was kind of getting burnt out. So I just kind of, you know, took a step back and focused more on what I love, which is making the music.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. I hope you had a killer weekend. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter. And trust me when I say this, if you are ever in Montreal and you are looking for a killer metal show to go to, well, Heavy Montreal will have you covered. I'm beyond stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Did you get a chance to check out the brand new Cryptopsy song? I hope that you did. It is now available on all streaming platforms. It is the first single coming up from our first album in over 10 years called As Gamora Burns. I am so excited to finally talk about the brand new Cryptopsy record that's coming out on September 8th via Nuclear Blast Records. Do it. Go check it out if you haven't yet. If you have, check it out again in abeyance. It's available on all streaming platforms. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. To someone in your life that just loves extreme, brutal death metal, well, you should absolutely let them know that the podcast exists. You could tell them that there are over 400 episodes where I sit down with some of the world's best extreme metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you would encourage one of your brutal metal heads to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. And today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be with Malika Sundaramurthy of Unfathomable Ruination and Emasculator. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 422.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm very stoked to be with Malika Sundaramurthy of Unfathomable Ruination, Emasculator, used to be an Abnormality. I am very, very excited to be with you. I've been following you for many years. Many fans have wanted to have you on the podcast. Here we are finally now hanging out. How are you doing?
Hell yeah, I'm doing really good. I'm honored to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
We're working on something very secretive, but we can't talk about that. So we'll talk about a whole bunch of other things. First off, let's just jump straight into it. This is Vox and Hops, where I hang out with my fellow metalheads. We talk all about their lives and music, and we enjoy killer craft beer. So what beer do you have on your side that we're going to be sharing virtually today?
Okay, so this one is a Czech-made beer. It's Mouflon, and it's the red ale, 13%.
Ooh.
But the 13% isn't about alcohol. It refers to the amount of hops in it. It's, as you know, in Czech Republic, if you know about that.
Or grains or hops or something. I remember playing a bar in Czech once, and there was this percentage thing. We were all like, oh my God, we're going to drink that. And we were crushing this beer all day, and we were like, I'm not drunk. It's
yeah, usually in America, the percent refers to the amount of alcohol, or in Canada, but this refers to, like, the texture of the beer. But it is a strong beer. I was warned to be careful with it. So, and this is my first time trying this one, actually, so we'll enjoy it together.
Hell yes.
I asked my husband, Serge, to pick out something special for the podcast, because I know it's all about beer and metal, so I didn't want to just drink anything. So this one is supposed to be good. I'll let you know as I'm drinking it.
Well, cheers to Serge for being your sommelier, your beer sommelier for this special occasion. On my side, I am drinking something new that I've never had before. It's from Le Relais Boreal. Now, Boreal is a massive brewery here in Quebec. one of the biggest macro micro breweries. They're like borderlining on not being micro anymore, but they basically put out the first red ale in Quebec back in the late 80s, and everyone thought it was like something was wrong with the beer, but it was just a red ale, you know. Now they've just expanded and started doing a bunch of haze over the past few years. Now they've opened this new establishment called Le Relais, which is a very, very small tap room here close to my house in Montreal. And Gabriel, who was on the podcast in the past, basically set up his little experiment shop in this place, and he makes any beer that he wants because it's so tiny. He can do small batches and turn them over, and they finally started like putting them in branded cans because they were just in white cans for the past year. And here is this one. This is their double IPA Galaxy, so it's 100% Galaxy hops, 8%. I'm gonna crack this, and Malika, I'd love to hear about your very first beer.
My very first beer that, oh my god, I don't remember, but I remember the first drink I ever had was like Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Hell yes.
In high school.
Yes, we had something similar up here in Montreal called Tornade, which is tornado.
Cheers.
That looks gorgeous. Ooh, gorgeous nose.
Oh wow, this is really good. And the glass is Master, which is another good Czech beer, actually.
Hell yeah.
So I asked my husband to pick the beer. He's actually very knowledgeable. He owns a bar in Czech Republic called Nightmare in Prague.
No way.
Yeah, so he was a good guide for me in terms of the beer.
See, no, that's cool. So next time I'm going to Prague, I'm going to Nightmare.
Oh, yes, please. You have to. You'll be our guest of honor.
I would love that because I have been to a metal bar in Prague, and you can... You're probably going to know Hell's Bells, I want to say.
Hell's Bells, yeah.
And I drank a very strange, spicy IPA because in Czech, in Prague, there's a hot pepper festival that's very popular, if I'm wrong there. And they had made an IPA for this festival, and I've never been able to find this beer again, but it was so spicy. It was too spicy.
Okay, I'm sure. Yeah, we have all kinds of festivals here, a lot. I'm not aware of the spicy pepper one. That's interesting. But Hell's Bells, yeah, it's the most well-known metal bar in Prague. Yeah, I've spent some nights there. It's really fun. Yeah, our bar is about horror movies, but nice. It's kind of like also known as a metal bar because we're playing metal there all the time. Yeah.
And horror movies and metal just is a perfect crossover, as much as beer and metal, which makes me
exactly.
very happy.
Exactly,
So take me back to that first Mike's Hard Lemonade. What was the story behind that?
It's embarrassing. Oh, just, you know, friends from high school and, you know, the first drink and, you know, hanging out with my buddies and like that's what they gave me, my older, more experienced friends. They're like, for your first drink, you should have something fruity. Here you go. Yeah, it tasted like lemonade, but a little different. Yeah. Then in terms of beer, I think probably the first beers, you know, as Americans, you know, we're having like, you know, Coors or Budweiser, you know, and I thought for the longest time that I didn't like beer, you know, because that's what I was exposed to, or PBR or whatever. And then it wasn't until I moved to Czech Republic that I was like, oh, I like beer, actually. If it doesn't taste like piss water, I like it. There's a lot of really good beer. And, you know, since I moved away, like this, you know, independent companies have really gotten more popular in the U.S. and Canada. Yeah. So, like, I've really missed out on the craft beer movement because I think I would have loved it, you know, if I was still in America. I would have enjoyed it all. But it's also popular here in Czech Republic, a lot of craft beer companies, too. And the classic Czech beer is really, really good beer. Some of the best in the world. Yeah.
There's so many craft beer breweries here in Montreal that just put out Czech style beers. There's one in specifically called Silo here in Montreal. Yeah. And there's actually like a whole pilgrimage that happens. A bunch of Quebec brewers do that. They all pilgrim to Czech Republic to like apprenticeship underneath these classic Czech brewers. So, and then they come back and they definitely don't steal Czech yeast. They never do that because it's illegal, but they totally do.
Yeah.
And then fly home with this living culture, you know, in their luggage, which they never do, but they totally do.
Yeah, but it's like, it is definitely a whole culture here. It's like the beer country here, you know, and it's a long, long history of beer making and it's all about like the water that goes into the beer, like the highest quality, everything. And yeah, they really, really hold their beer on a high level here. And they also make sure that it's affordable, which is really interesting. Like it's like subsidized by the government. And there's a saying that beer is cheaper than water everywhere, and it's true.
Wow.
And when you go to the restaurant, the beer is cheaper than the water, like, because they want to make it accessible to all, and it's like you get a really tasty beer and like for a really affordable price. So
see, that's a big difference from the States. If you had stayed in the States with the craft beer boom, you definitely would be spending a lot more money.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, when you get the more like, you know, craft, like, you know, small brewery stuff, you can pay more. But for like the mainstream beer, they keep it like at a really cheap price and good stuff. Yeah. But I think it's worth it, you know, if you're going to spend your money, might as well spend it on something that you enjoy, you know, something that people put a lot of love into.
Like,
you know,
death metal people.
Life's short. Yes.
Invest in death metal. We need it. Take me back to the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up in your parents or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Oh, God. So my parents are divorced, have been since I was in second grade, and they're very different people listening to very different kinds of music. So my mom was kind of a hippie, like in the 70s, but then she converted to born-again Christianity, and after that she only listened to like Christian music. But like when we were kids, we were exposed to some different, like, you know, like Joni Mitchell and, you know, some good folk kind of music. And then later my mom was just like blasting the Christian tunes. And my dad is from India, so I was exposed to a lot of, you know, Indian music and classical music. Like, you know, Ravi Shankar, I was going to like a concert with my dad, and yeah, a lot of Indian music. And my stepmother is also Indian. She was playing a lot of the, you know, the pop Indian music, like from the movies.
The Bollywood with that?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. They're from South India, so it's Tamil movies, and the Bollywood is like the Hindi movies, like from the North. But, you know, nowadays they make the movies like for everyone. They just like translate the languages. They dub it for everybody. And like, I think it's like world, you know, all over India, like the movie industry is the same now, but it used to be like North versus South. And my family was more like, they're from the South, and the movies they watched were the Southern movies.
Okay. I guess they realize that there's so many people you can profit off, so many more people.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
Come
yes.
on, people. Let's work together. Let's bring everyone together. Stop segregating stuff. No more genres and death metal. Death metal is death. Come on, people. No more beer wars. Just drink beer, people.
Yeah, but those like some of those pop songs I really hated. Honestly, some of them were really bad, and my stepmom was like controlling the radio with a strong arm. But so when I was, you know, a teenager, I'd go in my room and, you know, blast my music loud. And yeah, it wasn't really their cup of tea. But
what would be something you brought into the house that was against your parents' values, let's say? What would be the first CD that or first album that really shocked your parents of this, or if it did shock them, of this new discovery of your identity, let's say?
Well, I started, you know, listening to like rock and hard rock, like classic rock on the radio. And then I got into, this was in the 90s, and I started getting into heavier stuff like with nu metal, because that was, you
That's
know, all the
that
rage
there was
then.
At the time.
And, yes. So I was listening to like Rage Against the Machine. Deftones was my favorite band in high school. And I really liked Stone Temple Pilots and Alice in Chains. Like, it was like from like eighth grade, ninth grade. That's when, you know, the grunge movement was big, like Nirvana and Soundgarden and everything. So I started with that like lighter stuff. I really like was drawn to the heavier music. And then as I discovered heavier and heavier music, that's the direction I went into, and eventually landing in death metal. Which isn't the usual route that people take, I guess, but it was like a, you know, a gradual thing with me and making friends and sharing music, sharing cassette tapes with
yes.
friends.
That's how old I am. That's what we had to do.
That's the only way you could discover music. It's really crazy. The world is so different now. But yeah, we were giving each other, oh, you got to hear this. We'd take it from the CD. Like first it was like tapes, right? But then I would
carry home this tape.
Yeah. And then when CDs came out, then we would like dub it from the CD to a tape
yes.
and give it to your friend, like, oh, I recorded this, or you know, burn a CD yes. for each other, like,
burning
later.
CDs. Once, yes. yes.
Going from high school to college, that's what I did. I'd have, like, you know, burn CDs for friends from the actual CD and then get CDs from my friends. And that's how we shared music. That was before Napster and, like, as Napster was coming out. But I wasn't into Napster. Like, it was beyond me then. And I didn't want to do the whole illegal thing. So I let other people give me stuff from Napster, but I didn't delve into that.
That's smart. Let them get the viruses.
Yeah, and I was just... And I knew it was, like, wrong, so I was, like, buying real CDs, but I was checking out other music from burn stuff that my friends were giving me. But in high school, like, I was just, you know, discovering a lot of stuff from the radio or going to shows, and as many shows as I could go to, and going to, like, Warped Tour and Lollapalooza and, like, you know, different,
cool.
yeah, and Ozfest later in high school. Yeah, like, I went, like, 97, 98, 99, and discovered a lot of music that way. Like, that was Slipknot's first tour, like, big tour, and I was at that show. It's like crazy, yeah. Crazy people still listening to it, and they're still huge, and it's awesome. Yeah, like, our generation had some of the best music. Yeah, for sure. Like, all that stuff really influenced me, and, like, yeah, and just was an exciting time. Yeah, I just love music so much, and, like, yeah, just somehow got drawn more and more to the more extreme side of things and going into college. And I had a friend in high school that was in a death metal band. I guess that was the first introduction to death metal. And he was giving me, like, you know, Deicide, Cannibal Corpse and stuff like that. And when I first got Deicide, I was like, wow, he really hates God and Jesus. Wow, it's really, I was like, this is interesting. Yeah, but I was kind of, like, you know, rebelling against my mom's whole Christianity thing. So I was like, it was speaking to me also on a certain level. Yeah.
What was her reaction to you bringing in all this extreme stuff into the house? Was it something that she opposed, or did you have to do it secretly, or was she just open about it?
Yeah, she didn't really say anything, but I remember one day I was, like, you know, writing down the lyrics from a band I like, and she got the note. She's like, Malika, I'm worried about you. What is this you wrote down on this paper? I was like, Mom, it's just from a song. Don't worry.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but I know. But my parents didn't really, they didn't really have a problem with my music. They might tell me to turn it down or something. Yeah.
They bought your headphones.
if they could. Yeah. But, when I started making music, then, you know, they were actually really supportive. Like, I mean, they had no problem with it. My dad was just kind of like, Malika, you have such a nice voice. Why don't you use it? Why are you doing this screaming thing? But once it started going somewhere, then he was proud. He was like, good. He's like, then he would brag about me to random people. My daughter's in a death metal band. Like,
that's amazing.
Have you heard of them? Yeah, he's still to this day. So once he saw that it was, like, something real, then he was proud. At first, he totally didn't get it. He was like, why are you doing that? That's basically it.
Do you remember, let's talk about your voice. It was the next topic I wanted to hit. Sounds like you went to a lot of shows. It sounds like your parents were very open about that as well, which is amazing. People let kids go see shows. More venues should be all ages. It's difficult to organize, but more venues should be all ages. Young kids should be at shows. It's so much to learn at a show. So it's cool that your parents let you do that.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the very first harsh vocals you ever heard?
Well, like, it was probably, like, just hanging out with that friend from high school. Like, I saw him play jamming with his band, and I was like, what is he doing, like, with his voice? How do you do that? Yeah. But, like, the first concert with harsh vocals, or I guess, like, you know, watching Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, right? When Cannibal Corpse was in it. I was probably, like, 12 when came out, and I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I don't think I like it. And then later I discovered that I do like it. But
Same. Yeah,
this is probably the first exposure to death metal and, you know, MTV or whatever. Yeah, whatever. I used to, like, just love watching MTV music videos. Just, you know, I just, you know, from a very young age, just love music in general. At first it was, like, rock music and hard rock, but then metal. Yeah.
At what point did you start experimenting with your voice? You mentioned that your father said they have such a beautiful voice. Were you a singer? Were you in a choir before? Is it something that were you in theater? I'm basically just saying all the things that I did in high school, but before I started screaming. So talk to me about the evolution of your voice, basically.
Yeah. When I was really young, my parents put all of us kids into singing lessons. Like I grew up with three siblings, so there was four of us, and we were taking classical singing lessons. Wow. And doing concerts that way.
Really?
Yeah. So I was, you know, trained as much as could be singer. And then later I would do chorus in school. Yeah. And much later, when I was growing up, I took some opera singing lessons just to get better with, you know, to help with the metal singing too.
Yes. See, a lot of people don't think that, right? A lot of people don't think that it would work and it would, the lessons would cross over, but that's not true.
No, it did. And as having had experience with singing, I knew that the better I got with my clean singing, the more it would help with metal singing too. And, you know, I know that the singing from the diaphragm is hugely important, and who better than opera singers, you know?
Exactly.
they sing without a microphone, and they're just some of the most impressive vocalists ever. And in college I had a friend who was an opera singer, and I was just, you know, enamored with her voice and her abilities. So yeah, I started with her. She gave me a couple.
I'd sit next to her at a party and be like, by the way, what, how do you, oh yes, yeah.
I was, teach me. And so I did, you know, a couple lessons with her, and she's like, so you're a soprano? I was like, wow, it's cool. So I kept going, and then I started taking lessons with, you know, more full time with another opera singer for like a year or something. Yeah. Until I don't remember why it stopped, but oh, she moved away. That's why the teacher moved to New York City. So I was in Boston. So that's why I stopped taking lessons. But by then I had a pretty good foundation. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I got a lot out of this. I'm going to just, for now, just keep doing the metal thing.
Apply those techniques to the extreme vocals. Do you remember that first time that you screamed and you were like, oh, I'm good at this? Or there was a potential of being good at it? Because we were rarely good right away.
People are rarely good right away. Yeah, no, I'm going to admit that I sucked in the beginning, and most people will suck. And it's just, you have to have an interest to keep going. Yeah. So back then, you know, I was a teenager, and, you know, I had just discovered what death metal was. And I was just had a huge curiosity about it. And I was a singer, you know, I liked singing, and I was just curious, like, how do you do that with your voice? And I only knew
only in chorus. You were never in a band doing clean vocals.
No, but I had interest in being in a band. Like, I think since like No Doubt, I was like, in Gwen Stefani's like, totally want to do this like her. Like, I was like, I was like in eighth grade or something. I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then I started fantasizing about like being in a band, I think, from then. And like, you know, then later as like I liked heavier music, I wanted to do, you know, a heavy band. And I was trying in high school, I was trying to find other people to jam with, but it never really panned out. I did jam with like some friends from high school. Like, we were going to do a talent show together, and we did, we covered a Deftones song together, and we were going to do it in the talent show. But then they moved the date of the talent show, and I already had tickets to Woodstock 99. So I had to make a choice. Naturally, I went to Woodstock 99.
Absolutely. I agree. What Deftones track were you going to cover?
It's from Adrenaline.
Okay. There was Bored that kicked it off. There was Seven Words.
It was Seven Words, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I'll Never Be the Same, Breaking Decency,
exactly.
Don't Be Too Drunk, Don't Fall in My Living Room.
Yeah, funny how we remember all that stuff.
Yes, it was Seven Words, that's it. It's just been a minute since I've even thought about that, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that was it. That makes me happy that I'm bringing you back that far.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So I was totally into the new metal thing, but it was huge back then. And I had the Cakewear pants. Oh my gosh. They're back now. They're back. Like, it's so weird for me to be seeing it everywhere.
Everything is a cycle. Hopefully, extreme death metal, it sort of seems like it's back. So I'm just going to keep riding the wave right now.
It is. It's really popular right now.
I know.
Yeah, I'm surprised. And it kind of never went away, too.
Not like, for purists like us that are really involved in the scene, but in the popularity aspect of it.
Yeah, in terms of young people getting
exactly.
into it.
Bands
yeah.
like
yeah.
Undeath, Sanguis Sugabog, other bands yeah, such yeah. as that, all these bands that are just popping off right now, packing rooms.
Yeah,
very cool.
Yeah, good for them. Yeah.
Very cool. Very,
but,
very cool.
You know, these days I'm very much more into, you know, death metal and brutal death metal, but... You know, from time to time, I might pop in a Deftones album or something. Reminisce,
the nostalgia,
yes.
Nostalgia, is beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful. That's why you have a horror-themed bar, because nostalgia
yes.
is beautiful and very, very powerful. So as your voice is evolving, you start doing harsh vocals. You continued taking voice lessons to become a more proficient death metal vocalist, extreme vocalist. At what point did something like click in you and it was like unlocking a Pandora's box? What would be that for your voice?
So I think I developed my growl. I know that I developed my growl like around 17, 18 years old. Like I was just, you know, practicing to albums. I asked my friend who did it. He played guitar and sang. I'm like, how do you do this? He's like, I don't know. You just do it. I'm like, okay, thanks. So I just practiced until I got it. That was the advice back then. You just do it. You just do it your way. You find your way. And that's all we had back then. Nowadays, you can take vocal lessons for extreme vocals, but used to not be like that.
You mentioned you watched all the DVDs. I cut you off as you were saying that before. What DVDs were you
yeah.
talking about?
Oh, well, I was going to say I did in college. I got the Melissa Cross Den of Screaming just out of curiosity. And yeah, I love that you had her on your show. Yeah. So that
nice.
Was also influential.
So nice.
A lot of really good, good tips in there, you know, about, yeah, just like how not to mess up your throat on tour and things like that, that were very helpful.
Absolutely.
But that was already after I had been doing death metal vocals. It was just like another good tool in the tool bag.
There must have been things that you were like, oh no, I'm already doing that. So it's like reinforcing
yeah.
that you are doing
yeah.
the right things.
Yeah. And like good, like, you know, the classical music techniques I had already learned, you know, but like a lot of good, common sense things, like not talking over other bands and like, yeah. And I really, you know, I really loved her, warm up too. Yeah. Like
I still use it.
Yeah. I still use it too. Honestly. Yeah.
We should warm up together. That'd be fun.
Yes. Her voice is like soothing, like on tour. It's just like, it gets you in the zone. But I also warm up to other warm ups too. That's
okay.
just, but on tour, I like to use that one because it also just like helps me calm down. Like
15, 20 minutes and you're in the zone.
Yes. It's great. Yes. She's
basically
great.
I brush my hair and do that at the same time. It's basically what happens. It is soothing. It's,
yeah,
it's very
yeah.
soothing.
I can do it like in my sleep. I probably don't even need to play it because like I know
yeah.
it, like I've memorized it, but I enjoy like just putting it and not thinking and just like doing what, you know,
routine.
Getting ready for the
okay.
show.
The power routine. Of routine. The power of routine and the way that it psychologically affects us. It's very,
yes.
very interesting. I think as a vocalist, it's so important to be in the right mindset to perform
mm-hmm.
vocals. It's because it's not like a stretch thing. It's not like I need to change my strings. I need new drum skins or something. It's a lot of it's happening in our head. It's and controlling our body. So if
yeah.
something makes us feel
yes.
nice and relaxed, such as listening to a soothing Melissa Cross voice, it's a good
yes.
thing.
Yes, it's so true. Yeah. Your mindset is, it's like mind over matter and,
mm-hmm.
and your feelings, your emotions going into the show are going to completely affect how the show goes. If you're, you know, feeling it, it's going to show on the stage 100%.
And you've done this, played like big festivals, and then you're, for some reason, out of breath more because
yeah.
you're excited
yeah.
and nervous
yeah.
and it takes a few songs to like calm down.
Any kind of stress
up.
Or
yeah.
nervousness tenses you up, and that's really bad for singing. Definitely being relaxed is huge. But
breathe.
To get back to your question about the growl, I started, yeah, in high school, I just did it until I figured it out. And I wasn't like good at first. Like it sounded like pretty flat and bad at first. And I just kept doing it just because I liked it, just because I wanted to get better. I'm like, no, I'm going to make this heavier and better. And I want to try the low screams and the high screams and the mids. And I want to try this. Like, I want to do like, you know, like these vocalists who are doing a mix of vocals. I want to
yes.
try it. And I want to just have one sound. So I kept going and kept trying different things and until it got better and better. And until in college. That's when I had my first band, because in high school it never worked out. There was like a good a female friend that played guitar, and I was trying really hard to get her to start like the next, you know, all female metal band after Kitty. I was like, let's do this. But it was pretty hard to find motivated musicians in high school. I'm sure a lot of people can relate. And
well,
yeah.
you have to make a lot of like sacrifices if you want to be in a band in high school. You're not going to play necessarily the genre of music you want to play. You can play music, but it might not be what you want to play. That takes time.
Right.
Like-minded musicians. That's difficult.
Yes, definitely. Before like the real age of the internet existed then, but there wasn't really a lot to find there. It was hard to find people. You would go to like actual guitar store billboards to find like musicians.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the jammer. But, yeah.
Yeah. But then like in college already, it was easier. Like the internet was better. And there was like, I discovered the metal forum, Return to the Pit. And then that's how I really discovered a lot of like local musicians and stuff. But the first band I had was in college, and it was when I was traveling. I studied abroad in Spain.
Wow.
So the first band I actually had was in Spain.
That's
because
awesome.
I was studying abroad for a semester there. And it just happened that I was in class with some metalheads, and I was like, hey, nice death shirt. And like, we just started talking, and then I went to their jam session and ended up on the mic and ended up joining the band that already was existing before I was there, and played with them for those months. And then after I left, they kept going, and that's how it was.
So cool that they're going to, you had to go to Spain to find like-minded musicians. Come on, Boston. Let's go.
I think it was just fate. I'm sure it could have ended up. But then when I came back, I had already the hunger for it after that. I was like, I had the experience of playing. Even in those 6 months, we played 3 shows somehow. So like,
there
I came back
go.
And I was like, I want more of this.
Yeah.
So then I made friends with some more metalheads in my college in Boston, Massachusetts College of Art. Now it's Massachusetts College of Art and Design, or Mass Art for short. Yeah, so then I made some friends with some metalheads in my full-time school, and they introduced me to the Return to the Pit website. And then I started discovering the local Boston scene. I hadn't known about it before that, So then I found there was all these death metal bands in Boston. Yeah. And so I started going to more shows and meeting other musicians and playing on stage with some friends' bands until I had some failed projects before finally forming Abnormality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there was a band before that we never ended up recording, but yeah, it didn't work out. But those guys then formed Sexcrement, and some of those guys had been in Goratory before that. You've probably heard of Goratory.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to cross paths with a lot of the, you know, legendary metal guys in the Boston scene, and then got to form Abnormality. And Jay was in Goratory. He was the original drummer of Goratory, actually. The drummer from Abnormality. Mm-hmm. And some other projects too from the other guys. So I think it was just like fate, the way things happened, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, your voice was ready for when Abnormality took off, because it definitely did take off. It went a huge international act, toured all over the
Thank
world.
Thank you.
But you hung up your boots a few years ago. How did that feel to put an end to something?
It was really hard. Yeah. I definitely had, you know, second thoughts a lot. And did we do the right thing? Did I do the right thing to call it quits? And it was,
as opposed to just like a prolonged hiatus, let's say.
Yeah. Right. Like, but I felt inside that, you know, it was never going to get back together. So why leave it as on a hiatus and have people asking us all the time when we're getting back together? Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't want to give false hope to anyone when I knew inside that it wasn't going to get back together.
Mm. I just had Vicky Sarakis on, and she just, they pulled the plug on The Agonist a few months ago. And she was saying she wished more bands had the balls to pull the triggers. Exactly what she said, to not leave false hope in the hands of the fans.
It's really not easy, especially after being together many years. We had been together for 15 years.
Exactly.
It's such a long time.
Yeah.
So
like,
hard to
like
walk away
life,
from that.
A whole half a lifetime, you know?
It's like ending a relationship, you know? I guess it's the best comparison.
100%.
Like, getting divorced. I've been divorced, and that's the same feeling. You know, it's a relationship with four other people, or however many you have in your band. Yeah, it's a relationship of many years, and to end it is like has a lot of significance, and all those years spent together and memories and everything. It's yeah. But sometimes you have to. You know, life takes you in different directions, and you know, you'd be doing a disservice to yourself and the other members of the band if you, you know, tried too hard to keep it together when it's really just coming apart at the seams, you know. It's
healthier to stop it.
It's healthier. Yeah, it's healthier when you just know it in your heart when it's time, I think.
And had you not done that, hypothetically, you would not be where you are now with Unfathomable Ruination, which is a killer band that I got to play with back in 2019 when I was out on tour with Aborted. They jumped on the tour. So much fun. The UK portion of the tour was just killer. So you had replaced for them is what happened. And then they probably enjoyed that experience. And then their vocalist had to go at some point, and then they gave you the call.
Yeah, I was the first person that they thought of, and the only person that they tried out, the only person they thought of, actually. They just knew that I was the one that they wanted. I was surprised. I asked them, how many other people are you trying out? They're like, no one. I was like, really?
But when you tour with a band, you know, it's more than just what you can do on the mic. It's you as a human in the touring vehicle. The day-to-day, yeah. The socials, you do bring a lot. You run a label, mm-hmm. You're an artist, you're more than just a vocalist. So you come with like the, if you were like, I don't play, if you're a Pokemon character, you have all these extra like points on your card or Dungeons and Dragons or something. You're like a secret star.
I guess
star.
So, yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I bring a lot to the table, I suppose. And it helps that we were friends beforehand. Yeah, mm-hmm. It helps. You know, what better than having one of your friends in a band with you?
Absolutely.
So we had already been friends for years. We'd hung out, we'd partied before, and we just got each other. Like, we have the same taste in music. It just made sense. Yeah. For me, it was a no-brainer, like 100%. They asked me, I was like, this is like probably not really good timing, but yes, like I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to make this work. I have like two young kids, but I really want to do this. So we're going to make it work. Yeah. So we made it work. Yeah. And it's going really well.
We dropped a killer single, and I hope there's more music coming. The Defying Symphony of Universal Dissonance came out back in 2022. That was basically how they announced you being a part of the band. So I hope that you're working on new material now. And if you can't really talk about it, you can tell me that. But if there is something to talk about the future of new material coming up, what's going on there?
Yeah, I can talk about it because we've kind of said this online. Yeah, that we did the single just as a taste of what's to come, our collaboration together. And we are working towards the next full album. And this year or 2024, it will be out. Yeah.
Very exciting. I hope that we get to share the stage together. I hope we get to share many stages together because I had such a good time with them. A very, very fun band to party. And if they're listening to this, Manchester was fun.
I'm going to ask about the details later.
Not
but yeah,
the
guys had nothing but good things to say about you, though. Yeah, they were like, you have to go on the show. And so, yeah.
That makes me happy. That makes me very happy. talk to me about, you mentioned when in high school you were thinking about starting an all-female band. Now you're a mother of two in a band. Talk to me, what is the worst, stupidest question, and I hope it's not this one, that you've ever received because you're a female extreme vocalist?
I mean, it's the one I get all the time. What's it like being a girl in a metal band? It's like, what's it like being a man in a metal band? Like,
exactly.
What kind of question is that? Like, I only know what being a woman is. Like, I can't... It's like, it feels like being in a metal band. Like, what's this question supposed to ask? What's it like having a vagina? I don't understand what you're asking. But I get that question all the time. But, you know, I try to answer it, like, but... Yeah, it just is what it is. Eventually, it's not going to be such a big deal.
No, there's more. There's so much more prominent now. Amazing.
It's already much better
it's
than
amazing.
It was. And I celebrate it because when I got started playing in death metal bands, I was very often the only woman. And on tours with, you know, with three, four other bands, and I was the only woman amongst like 20 dudes, and I didn't like it. Anytime there was like a woman at the show, I was like,
"Be my friend.
Oh, thank God, give me a hug. I need the female energy. It's like totally like too much testosterone all around. I really love that there's so many more women involved and so many talented women involved in the metal scene now, and I love it. And I just hope that eventually it's going to be like 50-50 and it's going to not be a big deal at all, because women love metal, have from the very beginning been involved with metal. There's so many awesome female musicians. Unfortunately, so many have been discouraged, and, you know, it's really sad, like, how, you know, sexist the scene can be. And I'm glad that it's getting more and more balanced and it's becoming less of a big deal, for sure.
Everyone screams, both boys and baby girls. You know, it's a thing that humans do. They cry and they scream. So a lot of people don't think, like, oh, that's a girl. How can she do that with her voice? It's like, we can all do this with our voice. It's just about practicing.
Right. And it's like the demon voice, the metal voice. It's not really the male voice either. It's not male or female. It's like the monster voice.
Exactly.
And there could be a female monster or a male monster. And it's the same thing. It's like, it's not a gender thing.
And then
with
massive bands, I've said this about deathcore vocalists, with what Will's doing now on social media and the prominence that they have in the scene and social media, there's going to be a lot more really talented vocalists coming up. But the same thing is happening on the other spectrum with Courtney from Spirit Box and Ginger, Tatiana, I think is her name. Prominent, just like on social media, being so cool, being feminine, but also being just slaying extreme vocals. So all these young, I hope that's a whole new generation of young female extreme vocalists that are coming up because of these influences.
Yeah, I'm seeing like young girls cover like the Spirit Box songs or Ginger songs. I love it. I love to see it. Yeah, I think they're inspiring the next generation of metal singers and metal heads.
Hell yes, 50-50. Let's do 50-50. I like that. And the parties will be way more fun.
Oh my God, yeah. Who wants to be at a sausage party? Nobody. Not the guys and not the women.
Exactly.
So like, hello, let's make it balanced.
I think
everyone's
cool.
Going to be happier. Yeah.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right, I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States, and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer, and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode. Talk to me about running a label, Ultimate Massacre Productions, with your husband, with Serge. Talk to me about that, how that came together, the day-to-day of that. It's a lot of work running a label. I know that.
Yeah.
I thought about it myself. We've been talking about it at this exact moment, me and Christian from Cryptopsy.
Oh,
and
yeah?
I keep trying to discourage him because it seems like a lot of work. So convince me it's not.
So how honest do you want me to be?
Honest. Oh, it's a lot of work. I know it's a lot of work.
It's really a lot more work than I thought. And maybe I would have, you know, had a little bit more pause if I knew the reality of it. But I kind of, I love it. I love that we did it. And I had a lot of fun. It's been a really good experience. We're kind of winding it down a little bit because we're getting more active with our bands right
now.
With him with Epicardiectomy and me with Unfathomable. And my side project, Emasculator. So it takes so much time. You could be doing only a label and it would take all your time.
Oh, yeah.
So like to be splitting it between, you know, having bands and a job or kids. And right now I'm lucky that I'm in a country where we have maternity leave. So I haven't been working the last couple of years. So I've just been taking care of the kids and doing music right now. Yeah, so I'm really lucky to be in that position.
Yeah.
But eventually I will be going back to work too, so I'll be balancing all those things. So, like, yeah, we're kind of, you know, for a while, we really pushed the label, like, really strongly. I was thinking to make it my job, and mm-hmm. then I realized over time that it wasn't really, like, a big money stream. Yeah, it could be eventually, just, like, with a band if you push it eventually.
It's super hard. I spoke to Robin from Pelagic, and he... if it didn't work, it wasn't going to work. And it's hard to, it's a lot of investment, right? You need to store stuff. You need to ship stuff. The day to day is,
oh my gosh, our house is just full of so many things. Yeah. So I think and the label is still together. We're still doing it. We're just kind of doing it like more part-time instead of full-time. I was really pushing it full-time for a while. And then I realized, you know, I can make a lot more money doing art, like what I was doing. And I rather, you know, it was kind of just killing the excitement for me a little bit too. So I realized that I was happier doing music myself rather than supporting other bands, which I also enjoyed that experience of helping other bands, you know, break out. And I still completely will do that, you know, as my, you know, part-time, but I didn't want to do it like full-time and miss out on making music. So that was like, you know, I was doing everything all at once and I was kind of getting burnt out. So I just kind of, you know, took a step back and focused more on what I love, which is making the music. Yeah.
Your experience with the label, how does that affect your relationship with your band's labels? Like when you look at how your bands are being treated. Now you've stepped into Unfathomable and they're already on a label. I should have written that down, but I don't remember.
Willowtip
at this moment. So when you, and if Willowtip's listening, hello, how do you examine or your relationship with a band's relationship with their label after having been a label?
You know, I think the experience of owning a small record label, independent record label, has been, you know, really educational, and it's made me really appreciate all the independent labels out there and the ones doing really awesome big things. I see how much unpaid labor goes into it. It's a labor of love, just like being in a band. And there's so many amazing indie labels out there right now, and they're the ones doing the most interesting music, you know, some of the most interesting music right now. Yeah, so like NSE and Willowtip, yeah, there's some of the most amazing bands coming out on them, like Defeated Sanity and, you know, Putridity and things like that. So I have such a huge love for those labels. Severed Records, Abnormality was on in the beginning before we moved to Metal Blade. And yeah, just those guys, you know, making the music happen and getting the music spread around the world. I have such like a huge appreciation for it. And I really enjoyed those experience of really seeing like some awesome music and seeing the other side of things, because I had spent so many years as a band and I have a new appreciation for everything that labels do, you know, and spreading the music. I think I was, you know, as a band, you don't realize all the little things that go into having a label to get the music out. And
it's just easier to blame the labels, the label's fault.
It's easy to like hate your label. And now I just like really, I have so much like gratitude for like everything that the labels I've been on have like done for us. And like, the labels I'm currently on with my bands, like everything they're doing. And I can see from their perspective now, having owned a label, and I do, you know, I'm a lot better at promotion now. Having had a label, I understand how it works, the PR and social media and everything. So I got a lot better with it after that. And I'm using my knowledge now to help my bands that I'm doing. I educated myself, you know, while we had the label, we did everything ourselves, you know, so what goes into, you know, pressing CDs and vinyl, although we never did vinyl, but I looked into what goes into it and stuff. And the digital distribution side of things and Bandcamp and everything. Yeah. So I see the whole picture of the music industry now, and it's so tough, like for the major labels too, there's a lot less money to go around since, you know, most fans of music expect to stream music for free
these days.
And it's just the reality, you know, love it or hate it. It's just the reality. You know, most metalheads are going to use Spotify and you're going to get like 0.0001 cent per stream. And, you know, there's no point in staying mad about it if you're mad about it. You know, it's just the reality today. So like the majority of, you know, money is like from merchandise or like collectible items like vinyl and everything, or CDs, you know, so like Yeah, so seeing that, understanding that, and, you know, knowing that there's not such a huge profit margin for labels, like, bless them, like, all of them that are still doing it out there, like, killing it. So, yeah, it's just, it's given me, like, a whole new perspective and appreciation for the underground, you know, especially the underground, but also the, you know, mainstream metal, too, because it's not that easy for, you know, Metal Blade or the big labels, too, you know. It's like hit or miss on some albums, some bands.
They probably take a lot less chances than they would have in the back in the day because they want that somewhat of a recoup, a guaranteed recoup.
Right. I think they, yeah. I think they invest less too. Like they, I think it used to be like they'd give you like a, you know, a $60,000 advance, and I don't think they do that anymore. I mean, you can buy a car.
Not to most bands. Some bands maybe, but not to all of them. From experience, I'll say.
I think we missed the golden days of being in a metal band, like, you know, probably with like Obituary and like, you know, well, or like, you know, Metallica even, or, you know, I think they had a much different experience than our generation did making music.
True.
But I think it's awesome, like, that, you know, the underground is really where it's at. It's like the most true and you know, appreciative fans, and, you know, most, you know, everyone here is doing it for the love of the music and obviously not for the money. So it's just like, yeah, it's you know that everyone loves the music and is here for the right reasons.
Talk to me about your art. Being an artist, you went to art school, so I imagine that has something to do with it. How long have you drawn? What is this side of you?
Same like singing. I've been making art for as long as I can remember. I have like still have drawings from when I was like three years old.
Really?
I've been
wow.
drawing as long as I can remember. Yeah. And my mom like kept all my drawings. Like,
that's awesome.
So yeah, I have proof of it. Yeah. And I went to art school. Yeah. I think just because, you know, I kind of had a hard time figuring out what I was going to do after high school, but I felt the most drawn to art and music, and I guess mostly art I had the most experience in. So I went to art school, and and I've been, you know, working as a professional artist since then. Yeah. Freelancing sometimes.
Worked in video games too, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a good balance to my music, I think. So I can kind of treat, you know, art as my profession and music as my passion, as my more as my hobby. Although I've tried to make it more like full time at times, like with Abnormality, I was really pushing to make it like full time and do less work, but it's really hard. Just like with the label, it's really hard to make it your full-time job, at least if you're doing death metal. Like, maybe if you're doing deathcore or something a little bit more mainstream like Spirit Box, I think you could possibly do it full-time, but it's really hard.
Well, the art is a good side hustle, though, too.
Yeah, it's good that I can always do freelance or
exactly.
part-time work. Yeah, you always have to have some kind of side hustle when you're doing more underground music. Yeah, I think I could have, like, you know, pushed... It's possible that we could have done it full time, but it never would have been like a big salary. I guess there's always been more potential with the art side of things for me. So I kind of just let it go. Yeah. I tried for a while to make it like more full time, and then it wasn't really working out that easily, I guess. So I was like, okay, you know, it's better if this is more like, you know, as my passion and I can not worry about the money, you know, just, mm-hmm. you know, do this because I enjoy it. So that's kind of how I see it now. Yeah. For me at least. But I know other bands take it more as their full-time thing. For you, do you also work, or is it more your
full-time
thing?
No, I work full-time
yeah.
as an early childhood educator. The podcast is my side hustle. And the band comes and goes, ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
With the album cycles. So.
Yeah. I think it's easier. Like, but I mean, I'm friends with a lot of bands that do it full time, like, you know, like Suffocation. And they're just like road dogs, like constantly on tour, you know, and that's how you have to make ends. Yeah. You just have to make ends meet like that way by being on tour all the time. So, you know, once I got a little bit more settled in life, I was like, okay, I think I want to have a little bit more balance. And that's just like what I choose for my life. Yeah.
Same. I like the yin and the yang. I like being at home with my kids, and then I like going on tour and then missing both of them. You know
yes,
what I mean? On
yes.
tour, want to be home. When I'm at home, I want to be on tour, have that yin and yang approach. It's just, there's been a lot of at home over the past few years because of the pandemic, but It's coming back, people. September, we're hitting the States. Do it. Come hang out if you're around.
It is back. Yeah, that's a sweet spot, I think. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, but no, much respect to you, like, with Cryptopsy and everything. Oh, yeah, like,
thank you.
Everything that you guys do.
I love making collabs. I've made over 80 collabs in the past 4 years for the podcast. I've made some stuff for Cryptopsy. If you could make a perfect collab for you, it could be a beer, it could be anything else. What would the perfect collab be for you?
That's a good question. I would love a coffee collab, honestly, or beer, but coffee, I'm like big into coffee and tea. So coffee or tea. I love tea also. That would be something that I would enjoy every day. With beer, I'm like more like a once every couple weeks, once a month kind of drinker, especially after having kids. I don't drink too often, but a coffee collab would be awesome. And I'm loving all the death metal collaborations with coffee I've been seeing. So I would be really into a coffee collab.
There's a bunch of amazing coffee companies out there. I just got a bag from Blech. Blech. Bleegh. And you should definitely hang out with them and make an unfathomable ruination coffee. I think it'd be cool. One last question, classic Vox and Hops wrap up question. You just sort of hit it right there. Probably doesn't happen to you very often because, you know, as you just mentioned, you only drink every few weeks. But every once in a while, it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Oh, I drink as much water as I can and, you know, try to sleep as much as I can. And then I just power through.
Yes.
I never take aspirin.
No.
I'm that kind of person. So I just power through the sickness and I remind myself why not to do that. I feel awful. Let's go a long time before drinking that much.
See, that's wise words. And, you know, your husband owns a bar. So the potential of danger is always around you, but you've learned from your past mistakes, as not everyone does. So that's very inspiring. So listen to yourselves when you wake up in the morning, people, and say, you know, why did I do this to myself? I'm not going to do it again. Be like Malika and don't do it again. Malika, thank you so much for taking the time, hanging out with me, talking about your life, talking about music, talking about craft beer, talking about brand new Unfathomable Ruination. Not talking about our super top secret project that you're a part of, but we will do an episode with everyone involved once that's closer to the date. Malika, thank you so much. This was amazing.
Thank you, Matt. Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right today. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was an awesome conversation. I'm so stoked that I finally connected with Malika. What an incredible vocalist she is. I am so damn stoked to have her involved in a very top secret project that I will not talk about right now, but it's coming up eventually. She just kills it. One of the best out there. I'm very stoked for this brand new Unfathomable Ruination material that's going to see the light of day hopefully soon. Beyond stoked that we got to talk about her label, Ultimate Massacre Productions, and everything else that we've discussed. I'm beyond stoked that we are finally connected, and I cannot wait to hang out face to face. Malika, thank you so much. You rule. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. When you do that, you shall receive one email a week that contains all of the details of everything that has happened in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You get to see which episodes I dropped recently. You will get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will also get to hear about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. And you'll be up to date on anything that's going on in the world of Cryptopsy, such as our brand new album that is coming out on September 8th via Nuclear Blast called As Gamora Burns. You will also get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently, and you'll get to see which albums have been added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is curated by Jerry Mug, Vox and Hops' metal architect himself. Trust me, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and I hate when you miss a single thing, so please do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcast. I hope you have a killer rest of the week. I have one final episode until I take a month-long break in August coming up this Friday. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hello out there.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain.
Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Minahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!